TV time is 3 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this early morning scoop. A very good morning to you, all the Eagle FM listeners, no matter where you are tuning in from. We really, really appreciate your support. And today is Monday, the 21st of April, 2025. And of course, I welcome you to the early morning scoop, a program dedicated to you, just providing you with the latest updates on the economic entrepreneurship and, of course, public policy. And I'm your host, your usual host, Lois Ashimi, and I'll be keeping you company until the hour of 7:30, just to bring you the usual update, the economic, the entrepreneurship, and, of course, the public policy and trade as well. Now, to start off, before we get to start, please do not forget to visit our platforms, Eagle FM Namibia, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, as well as the Village News Web page on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Don't forget also to subscribe to our WhatsApp channel for daily news updates and, of course, newspaper alerts. And do download our Eagle FM app, available on your Google Play Store and, of course, your App Store, and just to stay also informed from to wherever you go. And as well, do not forget to ask for the newspaper. All you have to do is just to send through your detail to 081-200-4144. That's a number you can save, please, because you need to save so that you can always get the newspaper whenever it's out. That's Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And obviously, do not forget to download another app. That's now Imba app. You're finding it on your Google Play Store, plus your App Store. And of course, we can start off internationally, as well as the Nigeria is in the top group of a worsened food crisis. Inflation is gripping farmers and traders, and million farm face hunger, despite a new emergency plan. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Mohammed Sanusi has been selling beans for nearly 20 years, but he says a sharp rise in food prices is now crippling his business. Customers now shy away from the market where his stall is located, meaning he's not getting as many customers as before. Mohammed says his business is no longer sustainable.
The price has really gone up compared to before. I used to buy like half trailers of beans before at each pack of 45,000, and I won't sell them on less than 2 weeks. Now I can't even buy up to 50 bags at each pack of beans. It's now 125,000. With the increase in price, now most people don't even buy like before.
Worsening scenes like these prompted authorities to announce their food emergency just months after the last one in July 2023. The new strategy aims to improve food availability, stabilize market prices, and provide more support for farmers. But critics believe these efforts will inevitably fall short because deep-lying structural issues are not being properly addressed.
Food security is beyond production. It is ensuring that there is a balance table for both production and consumption. So if we get it right at the right time, then we make it a system that will continue to grow over the years. We should be food sufficient as a nation.
Despite fresh interventions, major barriers remain. Poor road networks, limited access to credit, and worsening climate conditions continue to impact farmers. Post-harvest losses are estimated at over 40%. Insecurity in the northeast and north-central zones also make farming a dangerous occupation in many communities. Experts are calling for long-term investment in storage, transportation, and partnerships with the private sector.
We need to check infrastructure. And if we want to say the truth without mincing words, we'll say that there's a lot of debt in infrastructure. And if I say infrastructure, I'm talking to storage and logistic-wise. If all of these are merged together and the government is playing their role very well, then we will be able to be food secure. And not just being food secure, we'll be able to even affect positively all the nations across our borders in Africa today.
Whether in urban markets or rural farms, the food crisis is worsening. Aid agencies now warn that over 33 million Nigerians could face critical hunger levels by next year. While the emergency plan offers hope, experts stress that faster and more coordinated action is needed to fix food production and delivery systems.
And there you have it. Now to move on is that as the excitement of the long weekend takes hold, many are using the opportunity to get together with family at their favorite holiday destination to rest. Now many accommodation facilities and airlines say they are almost full booked for this Easter weekend. Now despite the challenging economic time, both local and international tourists are taking advantage of the break to enjoy the tourist destinations that the country offers. We might take a listen to this particular update.
So not stopping people from making the most of the period to enjoy family time. The Kruger Park says the economic challenges have not impacted bookings at their facilities. The Rand weakness against the dollar has also been supportive of overseas visitors. Kruger Park spokesperson Ike Patler has called on visitors to the park to familiarize themselves with the rules of the park and to respect them, as failing to do so can lead to serious consequences.
Our observation has been that, especially for overseas visitors, that's where we get a lot of foreign currency coming into the Kruger National Park. And when our currency get a bargain and more time within the park. But for South Africans, it's traditional, it's a legacy, it's something that they have done over the years, and they do plan for that. We haven't seen any reduction in the number of people that are visiting the park, even though the economic situation is not ideal. But I guess the second point is also that it's self-catering. Accommodation is still fairly competitive and fairly accessible. And the different aspects of accommodation that we have also give people variety. You can go for the budget, which is your camping. You can bring your caravan and book a spot. You know, there's so many things that give us the advantage. But I also think it's the iconic status of the Kruger National Park that gives us an edge.
On the other hand, low-cost airline FlySafair says the majority of its flights are fully booked for this weekend and preceding public holidays. Chief Marketing Officer Kirby Gordon says they are seeing a lot of movement from inland destinations to the coast, among other trends.
One of the things that's quite cool to see is we fly from Johannesburg to Harare, and we're seeing a lot more people actually come in from Zimbabwe down to South Africa for the holidays than we're taking out, which is interesting. Similarly, lots of people going up to the bush, so the Nelspruit routes are quite busy as well. And then something that's quite fascinating is the sort of movement towards Durban. So particularly from the Cape, we're actually seeing really full flights leaving Cape Town into the KZN region, with more and more people heading there for the Easter holidays as well.
Gordon has welcomed the move towards KwaZulu-Natal after tourism was impacted by a persistent water crisis at the coast. Nosipho Khadebe, SABC.
All right, there you have it, dear listeners. And of course, now to move on to the next item is that the National Health Department will need over 2.8 billion rand to cover the gap left by the United States government funding. Now, the funding was mainly for HIV and tuberculosis projects in South Africa. We might take a listen to this update.
Department will need over 2.8 billion to cover the gap left by the United States government funding. The funding was mainly for HIV and tuberculosis projects.
How successful are we with fighting a germ or a pandemic? They look at, you know, the rate at which we acquire those new infections. So what's happening at the moment is because of our PEPFAR funding, and PEPFAR is the acronym for the AIDS Fund of the US government from which we received funding, the health department has commissioned a study, a modeling study, to say what will happen if we don't do anything, if we don't replace any of that funding. And that study showed that in addition to the 130,000 new infections that we already have each year, we will be looking at between 150,000 and 300,000 more infections over 4 years, so between 2025 and 2028. And in addition to that, we'll also see more AIDS deaths. The modeling studies say we're looking at a 38% increase in people who die of AIDS-related illnesses. So it's very important that the health department does act and does find money, whether that's from the fiscus, whether that's from additional donors or a combination of that, if we don't do anything, the stakes are really quite high.
They certainly are. I mean, a 38% increase in AIDS-related deaths is certainly something that is quite alarming and to be worried about. In addition to this funding that the government is speaking of, if the U.S., when the U.S. ends its funding by the 30th of September, they believe that's when it will come to an end. Is there other funding, or rather a bigger percentage of funding that we currently are receiving from other sources that could keep some of these programs going?
Just to put things in perspective, it's not that the funding ends at the 30th of September.
Yeah.
Already half of the funding has already ended. So the reason that is the case is when we get money from the AIDS fund from the US government, we can't receive it directly. It needs to go through an agency, a federal agency of the US government. And in South Africa, there are two such agencies through which we receive the money. The one is USAID, so that's the United States a fund for aid in countries like South Africa. And the other fund is it goes through the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's the equivalent of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases in South Africa. That's the American version of it. And the money that we received through USAID, that all stopped in February. The money that we received through the CDC, so the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that continued not because the Trump administration wanted to continue it, but because there was a court case that ordered them to allow these projects to continue until the 30th of September. And the reason why it's the 30th of September is that is when the financial year of the U.S. government ends. So if you look at the distribution between how much money did you get from USAID and how much money that we get from the CDC. We received just over 8 billion rands for the financial year here in South Africa, or for the US financial year as well. And just over half, about 57% of that money went through USAID. So what we're left with is really 47% of the projects right now. And when the government calculated how did they come to that 2.82 billion, they looked at the salaries that these workers that worked for these projects extend. They were about 25,000 workers who worked for them. Some were part-time, some were full-time. Around 15,000 were full-time. So we're sitting with about 7,500 left for the CDC projects. But what's happening is they looked at what would it cost if you had to want these workers to be part of the government health system. So when they looked at that, they said, well, there's many projects that manage these workers. So there were a lot of managers and a lot of duplication in management because they all worked for different organizations. So the 2.82 comes from cutting down a bit on managers, cutting down on some duplications of positions. So it's 63% of the costs of what it would cost to replace the USAID projects for the governments, our South African government's financial year from April to March next year, and 6 months of the CDC projects, because if they continue till September 30th, then we're looking at, you know, from October till the end of March. That's what the amount that they have. They got the information from the US government, from PEPFAR, the AIDS fund, but now they're in the position of where do they find the money from? Now, yes, we receive some money in the health department from the Bill and Melinda, from the Gates Foundation at the moment. We receive small amounts from other donors, but it doesn't come close to this 8 billion rands that we received from the US government. And when they spoke to other donors, donors were clear, we can give you small amounts, but we cannot give you anything that will make a huge dent in this. Mm. So what's happening right now is the health department has applied for an emergency grant from our own government through the Public Finance Management Act, the Section 16 emergency funding that you can apply for. They did it late this week, so we need to hear what is the outcome. Would they get that 2.8 billion or would they not? But the health department itself was very clear, should they not get it, there would be dire consequences.
Mia, in hindsight, could...
All right, the time is 18 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Now, to move on to the next item internationally, is that an investigation has been launched after the shocking revelation that Mpumalanga Education spent 2 million rand to buy 22 laptops. Now, this was confirmed by the Premise Education MEC, who was responding to questions from EFF in the Premise Registrar. Now, this has caused a spread outrage with the calls for accountability and transparency. We might have a listen to this update.
I'm wondering the sort of conversations that the DA is having just internally when you look at how this matter can and should be dealt with. 22 laptops for 2 million rand. If you do the mathematics, that would be what? Close to 90,000 rand for a laptop? But that's a very costly laptop.
Yes, it was shocking when the news broke. It's 91,480 rand per laptop. So this is a really a shocking state of event, if you can call it that. I went a little bit and did some investigation into what is expected from the department, because they made clear that this is for the education management information system. That's what they need it for, and that is the system all the education stuff is on, as well as for the information communications technology. So looking at what the need is for that, I think the first thing that we have to note is that these computers obviously were outdated, so they had to buy new ones. It's important to note that it's not a new program that they have to buy. The program is there, it's existing, they're using it. So when you buy new computers, you transfer your program over, and then, you know, you move on. The second thing is to note that all of the information is not stored on the computers, it's actually stored on a server. So through going through this, the estimate will be that for what the need is, that the education said in all our press releases, I don't know if there's time to read it, but the responsibility of managing Office 365 accounts, supporting schools, districts and circles, troubleshooting, resetting user passwords, assisting users with email connectivity, etc. A good 8 gig RAM from Dell between 10 to 15,000. Might have been a better option. It seems like the department went to buy a Polo, which they needed, but they actually bought a Rolls-Royce. So this is an exuberant amount of money. It's a waste of expenditure. And in a province where we have more than 1,700 vacant positions, and there's no money to fill these positions, it is not acceptable to spend 2 million rand on laptops.
But just, and I think this is important for us to clarify, because I actually had to do a search as well to see, all right, so if we're spending about 91,000 rand on a laptop, what is it, a Dell XPS 16S, that's the model, and I did a quick search. So, you know, on various platforms, it is actually charged at 91,000 rand. So the issue isn't necessarily that there was an inflating of prices during that procurement process.
Yes, you're right. That is not the question. The question is the Dell XPS 16 is going for that price. The question is, does the department need that specific? It is a high-tech computer that writes in Java and in all these kind of languages, computer languages that your chemical engineers will use. It's a very high-tech kind of computer that very... I don't want to say important people, but high-tech people need to use.
Yeah.
If you look at what the department needs it for, it's way too qualified, if you can call it. It's too high-tech for the need. So it's not about the 91,000 for the computer. That's true. It's, that's the department actually really need.
Yeah.
That specific computer.
So what are you getting back? Now, of course, I must say that our team did reach out to the Premier's office and provincial government in Mpumalanga to try and get a perspective. And we were told that they would not be speaking until the investigations into the matter had been concluded. And so I'm keen to hear just from the conversations that are taking place inside legislature with the Department of Education in the province, right, around, you know, what needs to be done? Is it being raised? How soon is it going to be handled? And what is the best way to deal with the matter moving forward?
Well, unfortunately, one cannot do much while there's an investigation. So we do welcome that Premier Ndlovu did decide to do an investigation, but we would ask of him to do it as soon as possible. And there's a couple of things that needs to be part of the investigation. I think the first thing is that it's from an independent investigator, so that it's not from the department, but actually from outside. The second thing is to look if it was CETA certified, because part of the agreement with this is that we, with the government, have good prices, not exuberant prices.
Yeah.
So that needs to be part of the investigation, but it needs to happen ASAP so that we can move forward, because one can only discuss the consequences. And I think consequences, there must be consequences in with people that made this decision, and if it was the wrong decision and the department doesn't need that level of computers. The thing is, it's about budget.
All right. Now, on the next item, to move on to Zambia, is that the Information and Media Minister, Cornelius Mwetwa, has refuted claims circulating on different media platforms suggesting that the government is in the process of introducing a bill to gang the media. Now, Mwetwa, who is also the chief government spokesperson, has described the statement as misleading and unfounded, stating that there is no such intention by the government to impose control on the media. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Nation has swept across social media, alleging that the government is pushing a new law to control the media. But the Minister of Information and Media, Cornelius Mwetwa, has stepped forward to set the record straight.
It is not true to say that the government has come up with any bill to regulate the media. The bill so herein before referred to has not been initiated by government. The bill was initially initiated by journalists under the umbrella body called Media Liaison Committee, and it has a long history before the UPND New Dawn administration took office.
At a press briefing in Choma, Mr. Mwetwa clarified the position of government.
That bill in question is not an initiation of government. Government at the Ministry of Information and Media has not initiated such a bill. Government at the Ministry of Information and Media has not generated NCAB memo to cabinet to indicate an intention for the initiation of the Zambia Institute of Journalists bill.
All right, so let's continue. Also underscored the existing regulations in the media industry.
The government will not gag the media. Let me indicate here that in this country presently, we do have 254 radio and television media houses that are fully licensed and operational. When you look at 254 media houses regulated by IBA, which is statutory regulation, you also have to know that none of the 254 media houses that are regulated via IBA is complaining that because they are regulated by statutory law, therefore their freedoms of expression and speech have been limited and or inhibited. None. In Zambia today, the only media houses that are not regulated this far, the main ones, are five. Namely, the Times of Zambia, the Daily Mail, the Daily Nation, Mast newspaper, and Diggers newspaper. The rest of the media houses, radio stations and TV stations, are regulated statutorily by the Independent Broadcasting Authority.
Mr. Maitwa also announced government plans to begin countrywide sensitization on the recently enacted cybersecurity law.
I want to indicate that government, through the Ministry of Information and Media, working hand in hand with the Ministry of Justice, will soon commence countrywide sensitization programs to ensure that we bring all our citizens up to speed with the provisions contained in the recently passed, you know, by Parliament, cyber security, you know, law, one which we believe as government is in good standing, and like it was seen on the floor of the House, it was widely supported. We must, however, state that we acknowledge and are cognizant of the fact that some stakeholders have received the cybersecurity, you know, law with mixed feelings. Some of them have gone ahead to assert that the cybersecurity law is intended to begin to breach the privacy of citizens, to begin surveillance.
We might take a lesson to a quick commercial break, then we'll be back later.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Omudiha utekirwa kabona imadina omjo. Chikawa shafathana nana alongeshi.
All right, the time is 30 minutes in the of 6 o'clock, and we will take a listen to one last update internationally. That this week, the health department announced it will remain on high alert for any sudden spike in local malaria transmission following a slight increase in the cases, particularly in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and KwaZulu-Natal. Now, travelers were urged to remain vigilant as they headed to various destinations over the Easter weekend. Now, the department also noted that outbreaks in neighboring countries, including Botswana, Eswatini, and Namibia, Mozambique, and of course Zimbabwe. We might take a listen to this particular update.
Just when you consider the number of people who've been traveling over the Easter period, with Limpopo also receiving visitors from countries in the SADC region, how concerning then is this likelihood of a spike in the malaria cases that we're seeing now currently?
Good afternoon. It's quite concerning, because we have seen these the last few weeks, the rain. And it is very important to understand that favorable climatic conditions for mosquito breeding is the rain and the water. So they love that, and that's why it is safer not to travel during the raining season, but more during the dry season. So we need to make sure that the patients or people needs to make sure that there are certain rules that they adhere to. It's not anymore, should I take prevention? It is now, you should take prevention as part of your healthcare plan, or part of your traveling kit that you need to have with you when traveling to these areas, as you correctly said. We know that the Limpopo area, Mpumalanga, KwaZulu-Natal, very high risk areas course of, again, the rains that we have seen recently, especially in the in KwaZulu-Natal. And so, please, it is important that you make sure that part of your kit traveling there is to make sure regarding is it a high-risk area or not. The second, do I need to take prophylaxis, that is medication? And then what else do I need to pack into my kit to prevent malaria? And that is the long sleeves, the mosquito nets, and as well as the sprays that you use that need at least 30% DEET to contain that to make sure. And then also to understand the mosquito that is the most dangerous, Anopheles, the female, Plasmodium falciparum is the one that normally bites at night. So between dawn and dusk, you need to make sure that you wear your long sleeves. And if you can, you know, if there's an aircon in your room, switch it on. Also make sure that you understand that we do not encourage people that was immune compromised, pregnant women, as well as children under the age of between 5 and younger, even up to the age of 8, to travel to these areas. You must make sure that you are well aware of the risks going there.
Mm. And I mean, you've answered that question then in terms of which groups of people would then be most vulnerable. But I want to move on to this now. The health department announced it would remain on high alert. I mean, what measures do you think are and perhaps should be taken at primary healthcare facilities to importantly detect and then treat these cases very quickly? I mean, one would imagine that frontline healthcare workers would also need much needed support too.
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing is for the patient to understand the symptoms. And here you have to distinguish between flu-like symptoms, COVID, and as well as your malaria. And, you know, if you don't recognize it, it makes it difficult by the time, I mean, you are admitted in a coma or something like that to a hospital then to try to sort yourself out in a clinical way. So, if we look at, and I think it's very important what you have said here. So if we look at the incubation periods, it means how long does it take? It can take anything from 1 to 4 weeks for your symptoms to appear after your infections. And some, like your Plasmodium vivax, can sleep in the liver and cause a flare-up months or even years later. So what do you need to do? You need to understand before you go and to one of these places, you need to understand what is the type of parasite. So falciparum is the most dangerous, the most common one in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa. Then there's also Ovalia and malaria, not so much a problem in our country as we see with the falciparum one. But here is what is important. After you have been bitten by a mosquito, the parasite travels to the liver. There it multiplies and then into your bloodstream. It normally bursts out of the bloodstream every 12 hours in the beginning. That's when the person experiences that fever, the chills, the sweating body, and aches. And this cycle can happen more or less for 2 or 3 days. So in between, the patient is fine. But when they get this parasites burst into the bloodstream, that's when they are really very, very sick for an hour, hour and a half.
You have that much our last update internationally. Now, to move on, we can take a short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll take a listen to what is happening economically within the country.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lodritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually to put it in my brain. An economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who knows does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Kadatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Kadatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM. Welcome back. The time is 38 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is early morning skip. Thank you so much for joining us again. And if you just joined us right now, thank you so much and a very good morning to you once more. Now, to start off with one of the news stories in our today's newspaper, please do not forget to ask or rather subscribe to the channel so that at least you can also get the newspaper and also you can also read for yourself. To start off is that the President Netumbo Nandetwa says only individuals whose fields were destroyed by flood will qualify for government drought relief support. Now, Nandi Ndaitwa was speaking during a visit on Saturday to relocate centers in the Umsati, Oshana and Ohangwen regions. Now, she assessed the living condition for flood displaced residents, monitored aid delivery, and of course evaluated relief efforts. Now, I don't want to see household registering themselves for drought relief. Now, it is the role of councillors to identify affected household early. That's what she said. Now, warning that the misrelocation of aid could deprive those who really need help. Now, if this is not done, some people who are also not affected those people that are not affected will now receive food, depriving those who need help truly. Now, she called on regional leaders to urgently register individuals whose crops was damaged, stressing that relief must go to the right people. Now, President Nandi Ndaitwa also made it clear that the government would not assist individuals unwilling to work for their own food. Now, I urge everyone to work very hard to produce their own food to meet the government halfway. That's what she said. Now, as part of her visit, the head of state toward in Mbadu warehouse in the Oshana region, and of course, Ohangwen region warehouse, which store drought relief food for distribution in affected area. And now she emphasized the importance of secure storage, transparency, and the timely delivery to ensure vulnerable communities are supported. Now, meanwhile, at the Henry Relocation Center in Oshana region, resident voiced the concern, Longeni Matetako, one of the affected individuals, said relocation has been an annual ideal, and this is the same as when we were out there hustling. Now, all we are asking for is land so that we can also have permanent plot and settle. That what one of the individuals said. Another resident experienced frustrations over limited food options and a loss of livelihood. Now, I used to sell fed cakes before I came here, but now life is difficult as I depend on the government for food. My stove was damaged by water, and I don't know where to start anymore, one said. And she also just raised concern about the unequal distribution of essential supplies such as mosquito nets. Now, most of the time when mosquito nets are distributed, they only consider pregnant mothers and babies instead of providing them to everyone, as we are all at risk of malaria. That what one said, according to Oshana Governor Area Irimari. The Ehenya Relocation Center currently accommodates about 1,377 people from 398 households. Now, that what the update says. Now, we might take a lesson to what President Netumbo Ndaitwa has shared her experience after visiting now these affected individuals on that certain relocation centers. We might take a lesson.
Yeah.
I just wanted to perhaps find out, you have visited Oshana and Omsati regarding the situation of flood and those that are relocated. What is your experience that you have seen so far?
Yeah, you are right. I'm basically visiting the senders where the flood victims are relocated. And thus far, what I found is a good cooperation between the government agencies, from the central government to the regional and local authorities, where the residents of local authorities are affected, like in Oshana, and also the cooperation from the citizens when they are being told to move from the areas which are potential for flooding. So because of that coordination, I have noted that in all the centers where I visited, that is Omsati and Oshana, they were able really to be assisted with the basic needs that a human being needs, like shelter, food, water, and they also have access to health services. And of course, also, you find that the children are given special attention in those centers. They are keeping them really clean. That has impressed me very well. And the coordination among the residents, you can see it from their reactions when they are receiving you, and when you look how they have set up their senders, even inside their tents where they are staying. So I can really see that teamwork is at play in dealing with this flood.
Mm-hmm. As the head of state, perhaps now that you have observed, what is your action from now forward regarding the situation of the flood and those that are relocated?
The national action should really, first and foremost, in Namibia, we have the Environmental Management Act. And the Environmental Management Act, its management, one of the tasks is by this to have the whole country mapped, and for people to be informed which are the areas where their water can run through, as well as wildlife, because you remember, like elephants, if elephants have their path and you put your homestead there, they will just come and walk through. So it's the same with the water. And really, to impress upon our citizens that they should avoid to be relocated, to locate themselves, to put up their houses in the areas where they know that the water runs there. So that is really what I have to impress upon, and to see if there are areas where in good times for them to relocate, so that we cannot be continuously having this problem of people affected by flood, when we know that we can find a solution to that.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes really to flood, thus far what I have said is what I have observed, and that is what's supposed to be done. One thing maybe I have to underline is that now that we are in the middle of the flood, people are told to avoid crossing the water. Particularly, there are specific areas that are so dangerous. But you noted that some people, they do not hear, to the extent that a number of the people we have lost thus far, it's not that maybe somebody was encircled by water and could not be helped to be evacuated somewhere. But it's those individuals, maybe they go and visit their friends, or they go to the entertainment centers, and then in the evening they are walking back. And those are the people we are losing. I'm really appealing to our people to be cautious and to avoid crossing in the water in the evenings, and crossing at very dangerous places. So let us coordinate. For a leader, it's so hard to lose a person in a manner that could be avoided. So I'm really appealing for people to obey to that call of avoiding crossing at waters where they are not.
Right, there you have it. You had it. Now, to move on to the next item is that the Easter weekend is fast becoming one of the most profitable period for small and medium enterprises in Namibia. Now, as entrepreneurs take advantage of the increased movement of people and highlight consumers' demand. Now, Nelson Daniel, a food vendor operating in Greenwell, is one of the main entrepreneurs who maximize the business opportunities that came with the long weekend. Now, he attributes his success to early preparation and proactive customer service training. Now, I made sure that I bought my stock 3 weeks in advance and educated my employees on how to treat customers before they buy the busy weekend started. Now, that's what he said. Daniel also has years of experience in the food industry. I said situational planning, situation planning is essential for entrepreneurs to succeed during a high traffic events. Now, he recalled how they capitalized on the hype around football matches involved in the popular Chula Chula team in Windhoek. At that time, when the Chula Chula team used to play in Windhoek and brought along a lot of supporters, grabbed that opportunity and took the business to the people by going into the field with my two daughters, he said. Now, he also further welcomed the government's recent move to invest 200 million Namibian dollars in upgrading sports stadiums across the country, stating that improved sports infrastructure can lead to better business operations and more entrepreneurial opportunities. Now, this kind of development is good for small businesses, and it is it's creates more events and which means more customers for us. Now, that's what he said. Now, meanwhile, Fernando Laco, a young entrepreneur selling cell phone parts, anchored a very similar sentiment originally from Angola. Laco moved to Namibia 15 years ago to learn English, drawn by the country's economic prospects. Now, Namibia has opportunity, he said, during the Easter weekend. I doubled my daily earnings. There were so many people moving around. It's really boosted my business. That's what Laco said. Now, Laco also, who now employs two assistance on a commission, said the increased food traffic gave his business much needed visibility. With more holidays and events on the calendar, both Daniel and Laco are optimistic about what lies ahead. Now, they believe also that with preparation, adaptability and smart strategies, SMEs can continue to thrive during a peak period. That's what they said. Now, staying on this, we also spoke to an entrepreneur, Lobby Amavira, to share his thoughts on this Easter weekend.
There's nothing wrong with retailing. Our Aupa, our Mbulus, our Punyus, our Namjebus, our Tate Malakias, our Tate Anjabas, our Tate Maumos, so many of them you can mention, they became who they are because of buy and sell. And today, their name, even if we fail to role model them after independence, they are names that we know.
Yes.
We call them without even thinking. We call them without even hesitating because we know them. So now, in a country like ours today, I can also tell you we have role models in terms of construction, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We have role models in terms of consulting for services, for example. We have role models. I think if I just say DJ Remind, everybody knows what DJ Remind does.
Mm-hmm.
But when that young man was in radio, he also is the one that allowed everybody today to call himself or herself a DJ. Because during his era, we understood exactly what DJing means. So you want people that stand in the shoes of our giants like the DJ Remind, the giants like the Tate Aupas, the giants like the Tate Beni Daruka that came from construction, and we say those are our role models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are our role models for the country, now, for everyone.
Yes. Now, once you are able to do that, I tell you now, there is one thing that I always say, You see, it's not about where you were born, whether you were born from a poor or a rich family. It's not true. It's the environment where you grew up that influences the person or the character of a person you will become in the end.
Mm-hmm.
That environment is very critical. So the activities that take place in that environment where you grow up is what is very, very critical. And that's why I'm not surprised when Namibians today will not be able to majority in terms of numbers be able to identify as those that eat red meat tomorrow or those that does not ascribe to eating meat tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I won't, because really the environment that we live in has not been critical enough to basically create a kind of a benchmark for where we want to be or who we want to be. So businesses today, as I see around Ondangwa where I am right now,
mm-hmm.
if I was in Ondangwa Town Council or the leadership of Ondangwa Town, I would probably want to promote something where I say, okay, you are a friend, you are a visitor, and as a visitor, you behave like a visitor. Today, no businesses will be open from our visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Only Namibians will be allowed because it's public holiday, right?
Yes.
And then I would also want to say, after 5, I would not want to see any foreigner business or visitors business open. I want only to see Namibians because
yes.
you have a specific, you know, duty
mm-hmm.
towards your own. I mean, I can't believe that we can say or we would want to say, you know, I'm equally responsible to Namibians as I'm responsible to foreigners in everything. It's not possible. This is Namibia for Namibians, right?
Yes.
So you would want your children to feel at home when they are here. But it does not mean that you do not want visitors to have, you know, feel at home here.
Yes.
They must feel at home.
They
yes.
must feel at home.
But they must
exactly.
feel at home the way a foreign a visitor feels at my house.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing to say discriminate, but discriminate when it comes to empowering, because you're more Namibian than anyone. I want to empower Namibians.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be apologetic about it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be very clear, Namibian first, and then second, we look as to, and only, I want actually, Bernadette, maybe I need to make it clear, because it can confuse also people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be labeled as you are being anti-foreigner. No, it's not a question of being anti-foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
It's a question of saying, for example, you have a piece of bread at home, you have children at home,
mm-hmm.
who do you give it to?
Like I have my children at home, right?
Yes, you have your children and you have just this limited piece of bread. Who do you give it to? To your neighbor's child or to your child?
I have to give it to my neighbor child.
Naturally, you have to give it to yourself. Because remember, it's a limited supply mm-hmm. of bread. There is no way you disadvantage yourself for another.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, we try and advantage ourselves. Because when you advantage yourself, you'll be in position to help others.
Yes.
But if you disadvantage yourself, you won't be able to grow positions that can help others. Also.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would also want to say, maybe during Easter is the time also we have to sit down and say, but let's look at as Namibians now and as maybe business people.
Mm-hmm.
When we want foreign direct investment, you get it in majorly in three forms, right? You either have a foreign direct investment in capital, which means if somebody that has capital and wants to supply you capital and you have to pay up interest as a way of his way of doing business. Or you have to promote a foreign direct investment that basically invests in your resources, natural resources. We have mining, we have fishing, we have agriculture. We have so many things, right?
Yeah, we have so many things.
In terms of resources.
Yeah.
So, but then you have the other way that you can say that I want only foreign direct investments that basically benefit or want to benefit from the market that I provide. Now, Many times, I always say, for me, it's better to invest in the market. Because marketing, if you come and invest in my market, I would want you to train people to be able to present your top, your brand,
mm-hmm.
or your products, or whatever.
And to make it well known.
Yes. Now, whenever you have an investment that involves capacitating your people, it's the best way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not like a resource-based investment that basically just extracts and goes sell somewhere else. Or somebody that just wants to borrow you money and then you are, you know, endlessly, you know, hooked up into vicious interest charges and all that, or whatever. So you want really to have an investment that can capacitate your own people. Now, in my own understanding, I always say market-related investments are the best. So now, when we are seated at homes during this Easter, we need also to try and understand what is the power of that thing called Oshimariwa. You know, in Oshiwambo, Oshimariwa means Oshimi Hachiriwa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes cow, cattle from you, it takes even mahangu from you, but itself it cannot be eaten. But it is able to move things that you can eat from you. So now, one has to try and understand the power of that little thing called a dollar. Once you have it, Bernadette, no one needs to know that you have it. You feel powerful, just within yourself. You feel very powerful. I can imagine, towards the end of the month, when you are about to receive your salary, you feel.
Do you think there is enough support or guidance for small businesses trying to innovate during this period or during public holidays?
Enough support from whom? From the customers or from where?
Just in general.
Or just in general.
Yeah.
No, you see, business, like I said, you see, there is what is called creating a conducive environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
That becomes a responsibility of those in government, those that can go to parliament to try and create laws that are able to, you know, make an environment conducive, right, for anyone to do business. Now, then you have market support in terms of, say, for example, what I was just trying to understand in terms of understanding when you have that dollar, you know, where when you have the dollar in your pocket, you are able to go out and buy. That transaction is also called support,
mm-hmm.
you know. Once you are able to transact in terms of, you know, moving a commodity from a shop, which only happens during payment of the price that is put up there,
mm-hmm.
then it also calls support. Now, I want to start with the one of government, for example, the one of creating a conducive environment. The one that have to create a conducive environment need to be understood from the level where our politicians are very clear. You know, politicians vow to protect all the territorial, let me say just every interest that Namibia has.
Mm-hmm.
They vow to protect that. Now they vow to protect the territorial integrity, the resources, everything. They vow, and its people, they vow to protect everything. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the understanding there is very clear. When you go to parliament, there is only one purpose for going to parliament. It's either to amend, it's either to repeal, or it's either to create laws, right?
Yes.
Now, once you find yourself in parliament and your concentration is in who is sitting opposite you, you are in the wrong space. Because your space there is supposed to look as to what we have. What laws do we have? For example, can a bank, This is just a general question, for example. Can a bank value for you a property and say, for example, your property is $2 million worth? Yeah? It's $2 million worth, right? And then you take, for example, $500,000 from the bank. And in between, because of whatever factors that came your way, you are unable to afford what you promised to afford to the bank. Now, obviously, the next step the bank does is legal, right? They take legal steps against you. Now, they take this house that they said at your point of borrowing is 2 million, and you borrowed only 500. And the bank then says, okay, fine, now, because you are unable to pay me, I take this house to myself for 100,000, but you still owe me 400. Is it right that way? Now, no one can answer that question than the parliamentarian.
Yeah.
So the parliamentarians need now to be in parliament for a purpose. That purpose is to repeal, that purpose is to amend, and that purpose is to make laws. So once a parliamentarian comes and says, but I don't understand why a banking institution is making billions of dollars of profit. And that is basically after 35 years of independence. That means our guys have been sleeping in parliament. Because how can you be surprised when you are the one sitting there? It doesn't make sense.
It does not make sense.
So, and that, those, it's what I call it's the basic support of government towards businesses. Then you have what I call the power of the dollar. Bernadette, I want you to understand this power of the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You see, money is power. But it's only power if you are very careful and understanding as to where you want to give this power to, the next person you want to donate the power to. If you spend this power wrongly, and you for example, walk away from your own, and you go support others, remember, you are empowering others over you. So those with the dollar, where the dollar will end up, are the ones that are going to feel strong. Now you, the one that had the dollar or you are earning the dollar, like I always love to say, Bernadette, in Namibia, as Africans or black people, we are the most powerful, we are the most richest people in this country. Right? Right? Bernadette, are you with me? Hello?
Final question. And I would like to ask, what advice would you give to someone running a small businesses or how to keep sales going over Easter weekends?
No, just try and understand the needs of people.
Mm-hmm.
What are the needs? Because any business is supposed to thrive only on needs. You see, what business people do, they are trying to first they identify the needs of people, and then they try and answer to those needs. Now, needs of people are endless. Supply to the supplies that you can get your hands on to be able to satisfy the needs is limited,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, now, obviously, what we are saying is any person that wants to get out into business must just try and understand what are those niches, what are those needs of those environments where they want to establish themselves. That's all you need to do.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, there you have it. The time is 6 minutes in the hour, 7 o'clock, and this is LA Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item is that after a decade of water scarcity, a resident of Tswasava village in the remote Mahoro, a constituency, are celebrating an access to clean and safe water from the five time in over 35 years. Now located 70 kilometers off the Mururani Road Highway, Tswasava has long struggled with basic infrastructure. Until recently, villagers had to walk between 5 and 8 kilometers daily to fetch water from nearby communities. Now, after exposing themselves to health risk from unsafe sources. Now, that changed last week when water began flowing from a new borehole drilled in the late 2024. Now, the borehole was established through a partnership between the Tswasava community and United Nations agencies, including UNICEF, UNFPA, and WFP. Now, it formed part of a broader initiative addressing child nutrition, immunization, and water sanitation under the UN Central Emergency Response Fund. Now, from the drought response in Kavango West, residents held the development as life-changing. Now, for the past 35 years, we had to walk 5 to 8 kilometers to fetch water from nearby villages. That's what had the headman, Elizabeth Pasiki, said. Now, we had nightmares as children would leave drowned and, of course, only return at dark wealth with the heavy containers. That's what Pasiki said. Now, Johannes Moronga, another resident, voiced gratitude for the development, but also warned against vandalism. It has been a long road to get here. If anyone think they can steal our solar panels or pump parts, we will deal with them accordingly. That's what he said. Now, with the community welcome to the new bell hall, the residents pointed out lingering challenges at the surface. Still lack a pre-primary school and the health clinic, where children currently walk 5 kilometers to the nearby schools, and the medical emergencies are often require travel to a distant health post or rather Rundu State Hospital. Now, we call on the institutions to visit us and see how our children and, of course, elderly suffer. And now that water is secured, let's build a kindergarten and build health services closer to the people. That's what Moronga suggested. Now, UNICEF, country representative in Namibia, Samuel Auckland, commended the community's resilient and urge them to build on the momentum. Now, you have to secure water, not secure your children's future. Write to the ministry and, of course, start that kindergarten and, of course, champion education, he said. Now, I used to walk 8 kilometers to school. Look where it's led. It led me, that what she said, and of course asked the question. Now, this Twasava borehole is one of the several interventions and the ongoing CELF fund drought response in the region. Similarly, initiative has already brought clean water to the communities of Gava and Mopini. Now, to move on to the next item, we spoke with Jerome Katea, a business consultant, and of course about the importance of beneficial ownership forms for businesses and for the country. Now, he also discussed how compliance is business. Businesses can enhance transparency and help prevent the countries from being grey listed. We might have to listen to this particular date.
Dear listeners, we are continuing with Early Morning Scoop. We are looking at business development. We are also looking at various ways on how to advance SME development and also cooperation development in Namibia in general. So today, this morning, we are going to talk about business beneficial ownership form. It's one of the very important form that has been talked about, particularly from BIPA and also other agencies. When you look at Bank of Namibia, Namibia Financial Intelligence Center, and all other sectors. However, this morning we are joined by Geronimo Katea. He's a business consultant, and he's going to engage us on the importance of this form and so what are some of the consequences if the businesses are not complying or they are not following what is a directive of, those institutions which are in charge of monitoring and evaluating of businesses and also making sure that there are legal frameworks which are followed. Geronimo Katea, good morning and welcome to Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Let us look into the matter. Maybe just for those listeners who never heard of this word, beneficial ownership form to businesses in Namibia. What do you really mean, and what is the importance of this form?
Thanks very much for the question. So, beneficial ownership form, it means it's a form whereby individuals who are running companies are obliged to fill out and submit that form to BIPA.
Okay.
So, in addition to that, companies and close corporations are the ones that are required by law to fill out and submit those business ownership forms.
Now, why does it matter? Why do I need to have it?
The main fundamental purpose of filling out and submitting the business ownership form is to combat money laundering in Namibia, and also to ensure that business owners are in good relations with the law, in good relations with the BIPA, and the commercial banks, Bank of Namibia, and also the government in general.
Now, maybe let us look at the law. What are some of the consequences, or maybe what are some of the punishment which are attached to me as a business operator not having beneficial ownership, or maybe not filling beneficial ownership form? What are some of the challenges which can come from that, or maybe the consequences, if I have to ask?
Well, the registrar of the Business Intellectual Property Authority can impose severe penalties, and which means the legal persons or the natural persons, meaning the companies or the owners of the companies, can be liable to penalties such as $50,000, and you can also be charged $1,000 daily after you are given that penalty fee of $50,000.
Now, is it only bigger corporations or all the businesses in Namibia which need to comply with this directive, or need to make sure that they fill this beneficial ownership form?
All the companies registered with the BIPA. Say, for instance, the company itself referred to, like, those big companies, PTYs, or the close corporation, the CC, are required by law to submit the beneficial ownership to BIPA.
Now, there are reports of fines, blacklisting, and even also deregistration. Why has the government taken such a firm stance on this issue? And what is the message being sent to business community?
Yeah, it means that if you want to be in good relations with the government, you need to submit those business ownership forms so that you can be able to participate in the tenders, so that you can also be able to get even the loan from the banks.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you don't do that, so there are just consequences that can follow you in relation with the law, and then you will be able to participate in those important government platforms, such as taking participating in or applying for tenders, and then also your account, your business account or personal account, can also be freezed from the bank side. Then you cannot be able to do anything without that. It's like you are armless. You see.
Yes, Geronimo, let us look at maybe it's access to information, because, you know, most of the business operators in Namibia that we have, for business owners, it's very difficult for them to get relevant information. What do you think is a barrier to right information, particularly information which are necessary for business development, like business beneficial ownership? What do you think is a barrier to access this right information to, you know, business owners in Namibia? And what can be done to make sure that Namibian business owners are up to date and they are fed with the right up to date information about business development?
Yeah, sometimes what I have realized in my experience is that we are too ignorant.
Okay.
Sometimes we hear the information, but we don't take the information very serious. Through the radios, and then say, for instance, this platform through the radio, it means for the information to reach out thousands and thousands of listeners. But then once we receive this information as listeners, do we act as business owners of those companies that are needed to fulfill the business ownership form to BIPA? Sometimes we just say, it's okay, maybe with time. But when also the law starts also to be implemented, we'll be able to face those legal consequences alone.
Yes, Geronimo Katea, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and thank you for your input.
Thanks so much, you're welcome.
moving on, we still want to further explore railway connection as it play a crucial role in the development of many advanced countries. However, the current state of the Namibian railway and, of course, train transportation seems to offer limited benefits for individual and, of course, small businesses. And we will be now joined by a civil engineer, Ephraim Shimbali, who will help us also understand the challenges and, of course, the opportunity within this particular sector. A very good morning to you, Shimbali, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Okay, morning, Lisa. How are you doing? I hope you are well.
We're doing great. Thank you so much. We're doing awesome. Yeah, Shimbali, as a civil engineer in the transportation sector, of course, how maybe well-equipped are our technicians and, of course, engineers in maintaining and, of course, repairing railway and trains in Namibia?
Thank you very much for the question. Mm-hmm. Such a good question. To give my own take and equipment level of our technicians and engineers in the media, I would say at the current state where we have good engineers, not like in the previous where we only had few engineers, but at this stage, University of Namibia is producing engineers, Namibia University of Technology is producing engineers, and there's a lot of engineers out there that though they have more of theoretical knowledge and not really practical knowledge, because there's a huge gap between the studies and doing the practical thing. I feel like, we have engineers that have a good knowledge on trains and railways. On the other hand, I would say, customers in particular, they have a technical school themselves where they get in young people, they get in the group. To go in there, learn practically, especially on the problems and solutions to be done on the ground. Because the technical school is the trans-knowledge itself. And it gives a real knowledge and practical knowledge of what is out there. I feel like we have good level of knowledge and skills in terms of repair and maintaining the railway trains as well as the railway tracks.
Now, having more of the engineers and people that are also have knowledge and skills on also within this industry. Now, are there maybe any new development in the engineering sector? A focus also on advanced technology. I mean, for upgrading and enhancing also smart trains in the country.
As we have, as it was rumored around last year, it seems like just Namibia and the government of Namibia wants to transform Namibia's railway industry towards the smart one, to move from the old technology of railways and move into the new one. And that is a good initiative that we are hearing. According to me, on my own knowledge towards Trans Namibia, it says that they have a good plan that they want to roll out of railway tracks that are connecting the whole of Namibia, connecting Angola, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and our neighboring countries to ensure that it's good transportation of goods between Namibia and other countries as well as throughout Namibia. And this is really a good initiative. Especially that it will help the trains. A cheap mode of transport which have helped a lot of countries towards industrialization because you get to move goods as well as human beings at a cheaper price. I really want the government to pay more attention into it and make sure that they implement it.
All right. Now, also, the railway system has shifted its focus from transporting people to just primarily moving goods all over the country. How can Namibia improve its railway system from an engineering perspective?
Yes, I remember those years we used to be called traveling through rail or railway transport. But I've seen the government or Transnet themselves for the past years they have just bumped it all. I feel like it's because of the maintenance, that's one thing. I feel like they're not doing enough to improve the railway tracks and make sure they improve our standard. On the other hand, I feel like Namibia moving from the old method of railways or from the old technology of railways is actually one of the most needed one, especially in moving people and just not people and goods. Also, as you have seen for the past year, they are only moving goods. And we've seen a lot of incidents or accidents that happen because the railway trains are not really in a good condition, and there's not this good accountability in the people ensuring that our railways are very taken care of and they're very safe to drive on. So yeah, we need to do a lot. We need to improve the level of technology where we are in, and this will help us in that way of life. It will help us move goods, raw materials at a cheaper price and industrialize through in our country. We need to produce goods within our country, and the railways are some of, it's one of the transport modes that will help us move from point A to B. We need to run our own economy. But railways, if they are not there, we will not be able to, because other modes of transport are very expensive to do business with. As you have seen in other countries, most of the countries that developed railway transport is very, it's present, and it's helping them industrialize.
Just want to understand, of course, my listeners too, are there any challenges also within the industry itself? Perhaps maybe could be the reason why the industry is not really prospering.
Yes, yeah. This mode of transport is actually one of the barriers towards us industrializing as a country. Because for you to move raw materials from your factories in another place, you need to move it and transport it to another area. But as we're speaking, it has been kept to the private industry. The government is really benefiting out of it. So it's mostly the private industry that's doing that. We have the likes of Running Crusher in Tumut. They are really utilizing the railway track, and that's their own railway track. Then you can see Running Crusher is one of the good suppliers of bricks, of materials, in the northern of Namibia. They're doing good business. I'm sure they're earning a lot. If we, as the government of Namibia, through Trans-Namib as a parastatal, tend to expand the railway track and ensure that all around the country, they go to all the areas in Namibia to ensure that we transport people, we also transport the goods to make sure that we take them to factories to be processed and make products, because your GDP is your product that you produce and sell to make a revenue, which will really help us to grow. And that's the way we are going to take improve unemployment. Because you get to employ them to do the actual railway design tracks as well as maintenance. Your railway, your trains, and this will also help them get employed in the industry that is moving from point A to B. As you know, we are all black in Industrial Revolution number 2, and we need to move to Industrial Revolution number 3, where we need to produce products. And if there's no cheaper mode of transporting the raw materials, then so that we add value on it, we don't hike the prices, when we are unable to develop.
Lastly, Shimpale, in terms of education, maybe what steps should be taken to expose our students and, of course, learners just to various careers in or rather within the railway industry?
Yeah, I feel like starting a Trans-Namib where they already have a technical school that teaches the learners or the youth about the actual substances on the ground and that are involved in day-to-day practices in railway trains and railway tracks. I feel like we need to invest more. As the government, we need to invest more in this school. And especially when the world is moving in the world of technology, we need to also invest in this Trans-Namib technical school to ensure that we just don't leave it where it is now. We need to move it to the smart trains and make sure that we produce railway tracks and as well as railway trains that are smart. And calling in investors to do it of us is another debt that we are creating on the government, because what's going to benefit us is going to benefit the investors. And that the The main concept should be to get in people to come and train our people so that they do it on themselves.
Mm.
But we, just the Namibians, are the ones that will run the industry of trains. And the government should be the forefront, should be at the forefront of this initiative. They should make sure that they fund investors to come and teach, not to do. They must come and teach our people to do it. They must do it with Namibians through teaching and make sure that from there, even if they want to leave, they can live, but the knowledge and the skills remains with our people to do it on themselves.
Okay.
And not for them to come in and then when they want to leave, they leave and they don't leave any knowledge and our people suffer the end and the economy suffer the end. I think we need to enhance more on this Trans-Namib Technical School and make sure that we move it from the traditional method of locomotives towards the smart trains, and then we can build our smart technology railway track and railway transport. Yeah, I would say, to give my last word, it's mostly to say, the changes and the developments that need to happen only happen when you take the steps on your own. Only when you do it by yourself and not waiting for someone to come and do it for you. If you are hungry, you have to cook food to eat and not let someone to bring them at the table at the expense that you cannot afford. So I feel like as the government and leaders of the future, as the youth and people that we have now are presiding over our leadership, we just need to make sure that we get to the ideology of initiation, whereby we do anything on our own, whereby we make sure that we are the owners of our economy. We run our economy and drive it, because the only way we're going to develop is when we do it from point A to point B, and not for someone to do it for us, because ultimately the benefit goes to the person doing it on your behalf and not to you. So if you're doing it to earn the revenue and ensure that we tackle other community problems, that will really help us as a nation, and we are going to develop. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to your listeners. I'm wishing you a great day, and thank you for giving me this platform.
We appreciate you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
All right, the time is 29 minutes in the off 7 o'clock, and that was Shane Bali speaking about the railway systems, whereby he is also just emphasizing the need to restructure, and he said that the need, if that need or whether if this restructuring happened, of course that industry will really bring in the economy, or the who will also just boost the economy, just emphasizing that also the carrying of goods, it's not really a problem, but it should also not only goods, but it also should also focus on transporting people to different places as used to be when they started with this railway industry. Now we'll go into a very short commercial break. Then once we return, we'll also have a bit of a discussion with my colleague Nomenwa Erastus on the who might take a very, very short commercial break.
Omutiha with the Kirokabuna e Matina Omjo. Chikawa Shafa Sanana, Longishifa, Yai, Shiwika Moshiwana, Iomoyawa, Otaingo Samani, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Omitombanawa, Omjika, Faithanina, Omaguro, Niranitoma, Yue, Longishifa, Okupiramo, Igelefem Media House, Way 20 Timiniha, Uka Kombanga Nina, Kara Omkashifreki, Yimopo, Yomo Programma de Tu, Moambo, Lingira. Selma, kodara heta tuimu. Datunda tu, heari hamano tano, oni aj. Eagle FM, go high.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually
to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So. Not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
the views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, Rio Sherero Omainduriro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Song for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Omutiha with the Kirokaguna, E. Matina, Omjo. Chicago Shafa Sanana, Longishifa, Yai, Shuita Moshiwana, E. Moyawa, Otaingo Botisamani, Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Omjom Banawa, Omjika. Saitanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Okupiramo, Eagle FM Media House. We 22 Meha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki wimepo iyo moe programa letu. Moambo lengira selma onara heta timu. Datunda tu heari hamano tano o ambiyaj. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludwitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Onsea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my...
All right, the time is 36 minutes past 7, and of course, this is Early Morning Scoop. Again, we did not conclude yet, but I apologize for a lot of ads there. So we're now joined by my colleague, Manuel Erastus, just to take us through one of the good update or item that we need to discuss right now before I close over to the next item. A very good morning to you, Manuel, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Yes, good morning to you, Loisa. Thank you so much for having me.
I am doing great. Yeah, and you know, meanwhile, I mean, following the recent rains, the Northeast now rush and green, right? With food thriving also, as we look forward for, to a great harvest this year, I think. So now the Oceanas also are filled with water, providing also the grazing for the livestock. I mean, I remember I called one of our reporters in Gwena region, and then he said that it's all green over the past 10 years. I mean, they didn't really receive good rain, and they couldn't even, see green grasses around their area. So it's so shocking. So, you know, perhaps like in that regard, how can maybe we turn this natural abundance into a commercial activity as economists?
Yeah, and I think that is one of the most critical issue at this point is understanding or understanding how can we go commercial with what we have. Because if you look at over the years there are, okay, I think for the past 5 years to say we didn't receive plenty of rainfall. Animals died. We have been receiving food or drought food from elsewhere. Like literally we lost a lot of, we lost a lot. And we have been receiving drought food from elsewhere. Government even came up with vouchers and things like that. But I think after now this year, after seeing what we are capable of and the rainfall that we can receive in the north, now the key question is here to say, are we going to continue producing at a substance level? That is the key question. Like, if you're going to produce mahangu, if you're going to produce beans, you're going to produce a fukwa, like you as the owner of the field. Now, given this, like, adequate rainfall, can we now start having a conversation to say, how do we incentivize our substance farmers, like these people in the north and in the Kamanga region who do seasonal planting? How do we encourage them to produce so much so that we can have surplus? That is the key question. Because I know for the past 5 years we haven't received enough rain.
Yeah.
And that is okay. But now you've seen, or all of us we've seen, that we can actually receive more rainfall in the northern region in Kunene until Kavango. But the most important part is that how do we now get our subsistence farmers to get to a level where every season they are actually motivated or encouraged or supplied or actually just got capacity to get to such a level to produce adequately so that we can have supply. That is actually the most important farm. The important question, because when you are under stress, when you are under drought, you will not be able to convince people to produce more or to produce adequately. But now we have a season of abundance of so much production, and I think it should be used for us to sit down with our farmers that, okay, colleagues, go around, collect enough food, do this and that, so that next season we can now be producing more than what we need. Because we in the northern, if you go like to Nganjara or Balode and others, and also Korongade and as you go to Pune and others, these colleagues have they have bigger fields, and they can actually fill up our silos, whether it's mango, whether it's maize, if we can just speak to them on time. And we can use this good season or good harvest season to actually sit down our farmers to say, can we do better? Can we go big when it comes to utilizing our field? Because I know that one of the conversations that people think or have is that, no, our fields are small, we need more land, like, yeah, we now 30 or things like that. But when it comes to the direction where the world is going about farming, it's just not about how bigger the land is, how bigger the land that we have. It's about the yield, like the yield per hectare. So now, given this season of green and unexpected harvest, I think is the best time actually to sit together with our farm to invest more in extension workers, to avail more of the agricultural support which is available, from tractors to seed to whatever, so that then all the season now that are coming, we can actually use our people that are already doing this area, the subsistence level, to be able to produce and to have surpluses. And we can actually use that to fill up our silos for drought, for flood purposes. But more importantly, to cultivate a culture of commercial production. Because we are doing farming, or we are doing, because now since everybody is going to the university, we are sending kids, we are waiting for people at Greenkin to produce, we are waiting for people at Ontario to produce. How about we get our people there? Okay. How about we start actually investing and training them and capacitating them to be able to cultivate their field fully? And we're not just talking about Mahango. Because if you look at what is coming to the north now, the concerning rate of beans and mfuko, like literally we can have a plenty of food coming from the subsistence farmers. And actually, because we people are starting to harvest now, we're in April. And imagine if we can produce enough for May, June, July, August, not just in terms of mahango, but we can also have plenty of beans and plenty of sesfoka, plenty of others that can be produced. So the most important thing is that we need to change the narrative of how a traditional field work. We know how to change the culture of producing at such a level, but these people or our grandmothers and others cannot change the culture just like that. So it requires like literally a national effort that will get people to participate at social, at such a level. And I think the current season can be one of the greatest motivator to all of them. So it just now has to take a government to come up with a strategy of creating an awareness and capacitating the people and putting things all in order. Because we are here talking about food security. We want to create food security, but I think there is a misconception about food security to say, no, our farmers, our green scheme and all these must, no. But we have people who cultivate every year. We have people who have fields that can be cultivated to a certain extent, that they can produce so much and they can have a surplus that can be sold or that can be actually be consumed for 3 months or 4 months among ourselves. And we do not have to go to somebody. Because and the only motivator is here that the people need a market. I can tell you this, that if your grandmother is told that if you produce more and you can actually sell your excess mango, like your 2 containers or 3 containers, and get 4,000 for meat while you're having the other one for the next season, they will start or they will be encouraged to produce more. But that mindset needs to be changed. The capacity building and the availing of certain of what is needed to cultivate on time. The weather forecast need to be done when we come to around September, October already there. So that people get to understand that, okay, are we expecting a good season? Are we expecting a bad season? And the government together with the people, like the subsistence farmers, they can work together so that the season can be planned. Because what we lack is that the season is not being planned. People do not know if it's going to be a good rain, if it's going to be a bad one. And at the same time, when it comes to things that they needed to use, those things, they do not come on time. And that's what I'm saying, that we can now use, all of us now we can see the green. All of us now we can see the beautiful harvest. All of us now we can see what we are getting apart from the hunger. We can see what we are getting from a football, from beans and from others and from maize. Now, can we use this season to talk to our people and to create the capacity and to get the right culture, the right seed that we can actually store and distribute for the next season, and actually avail almost everything that the success farmer need for them to have another season like this. Because another season like this, Loise, it's not really just about the rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
It's also about what the seeds, what is available to access the farmers, what training did we give them, what must they plant, what does government be committed to buy if they produce it. There is a type of understanding you need to create among your people so that they can stop or so that they can start cultivating with a different mindset to say, let us cultivate the oil field. If we have more, we're going to sell this. Our government wants it. I know our people want it. They have been told by our government. They implement. But until that strategy is in place, until that the conversation is created, until that awareness is made, our people are told, especially our grandmother and everybody, they will not participate. They will keep cultivating this for construction purposes.
On that, the drought situation actually, so the president was just in the north also these days, or Saturday, that, Saturday. So now, visiting just the flood settlement, of course, or the food storage also. Now, can we perhaps maybe just use that season to produce enough and use it for our reserves, or what do you say there?
Yeah. And that's actually very, very important, because we need to ask it also the Prime Minister. Because if you see now, the President came at the north to assess the flood. And I'm saying, and for the past years, he came here again the previous President also came, who declared the state of emergency because of drought. Now, I want us to use the situation very well, because you cannot keep declaring flood emergency and drought emergency, and you do not develop a strategy on how to mitigate it and where you're going to get the food. Because what are the people that are there now in the tents, what are we feeding them is the key question. Can we go? I know Eagle FM and the village have reported on how many tents were created and blah, 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 this and this. But I wanted to ask ourselves, those people in the tent, what are we feeding them? Because one of the pictures I saw is that they are Akem the fish, I don't know if they come from Tadoga, they come from Namibia. But the key question, why don't we feed them the surplus beans that we are harvesting right now? Can you make a call that all those who have surplus beans from your field, government want to sell it? I mean, government want to buy it. Why don't we create that? Because the key question is that we need to create a market of what we're producing. So why must we feed those people in the tent?
Okay, we have a paid ad here, so we need to tune into that. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right.
Where is it? Is it this girl?
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% off its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it. Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. Auto Cash, it's that simple.
Need lightning fast internet? Paratus has you covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Paratus' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through a high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Paratus today. visit us online at veratus.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
Always statistics show that more than 12,000 road accidents were recorded in Namibia last year. Therefore, I believe zero is the only acceptable number of accidents on our roads this Easter. It is not impossible. Be responsible, do the right thing, and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
You're now tuned into the F&B segment, proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.